Frost Place director Maudell Driscoll says volunteer Dee McCoon was emptying the contents of a small closet during a routine cleanup when she noticed something unusual about the large slab of wood supporting the shelf.
She said that she had found something and we should come over and take a look, and she just brought it out very matter-of-factly, and we put it on the ground, and it took everyone's breath away. A couple of people were brought to tears, and we just looked at it for a second and was like, what? Wow, can this be?
Driscoll flips the old shelf support around. Two aged squares of ink-stained cardstock are nailed to the front.
That handwriting is pretty unmistakable.
One cardstock square is washed away, but the other, with its unmistakable handwriting, is clearly legible. And Driscoll reads it.
For SS St. Paul, sailing February 13th, American Line, Liverpool, please forward with dispatch. And then on the side, there's a wonderful hand kind of carved, R. Frost, Plymouth, New Hampshire, USA.
Frost biographer Jay Perini suggests this was the lid of a shipping crate that accompanied Robert Frost and his family back from England in 1915.
He had a wooden crate that was mainly filled with his notebooks and manuscripts. And so books, he collected quite a number of books while in England. So I think that was the basis of his own private library and why it was very important to him.
In 1912, Frost's grandfather died. Frost inherited a bit of money and was able to sell the family farm and dairy. Frost himself was drawn to Canada to follow in the footsteps of a friend, but his wife Eleanor was eager to live under a thatched roof in England. Perini says they flipped a coin, Robert lost, and England it was.
I think all of Frost's life could be divided into before England and after England. Before England, Frost was working as a school teacher in New Hampshire and a part-time dairy farmer and raising four children. I mean, no one had ever heard of Robert Frost.
But almost immediately upon arriving in England, things began to change.
So a little tiny London publisher called David Nutt accepted his book within 2 months of Frost's arrival in England, and suddenly Frost was up and running.
If a flip of the coin brought the Frost to England, it was a much more serious matter that sent them home. The First World War had begun, and the Frosts were increasingly worried they might be trapped in England, as a letter Frost wrote to his friend, the literary critic Sidney Cox, makes clear.
They say the Germans have made the whole Atlantic unsafe. This raises questions for me. One, do I dare to go home now? Two, won't it be more dangerous to go every day we delay? Three, won't it be impossible to get money across to live on pretty soon? Four, do I dare to stay? Perhaps you think I'm joking. I am never so serious as when I am.
With a submarine blockade encircling England, the Frost decided it was time to go. At midnight on February 13th, 1915, they boarded the SS St. Paul for the harrowing journey home. With the portholes blacked out, Perini says the St. Paul was escorted out to sea by two British warships on the lookout for German submarines and mines.
And by the time he came back to America, suddenly we're, you know, A.D. and Frost to Anno Domini. And Frost is a major American poet.
What then is so moving or powerful about a 100-year-old piece of wood that Frost himself used to prop a shelf? Both Perini and Driscoll agree it has little objective value, but
it's a bit like the Shroud of Turin. People love little objects to which they might attach some feeling and significance.
But this, in the same way that great art or literature invites you in and brings you to this kind of startling perspective, invites you to imagine him prying open the crate. It places him there in a tangible way.
Whose wood this is? I think I know. For NHPR, I'm Sean Hurley.